No, they got into space first. They didn't land on the moon first.
They also got a dog in space
allegedly.
I was waiting for it. I knew it was going to happen.
Everyone knows space isn't real.
Have any of us ever been there? No.
I mean, think about it. A big empty space where there's nothing in it but us. Get a grip.
Ridiculous.
Quite conceited, doesn't it? Imagine if we played some sort of game in this. Imagine.
We all know that Earth is procedurally generated, and as soon as you get near the edge, it generates some more, and that gives the illusion that it's round.
Speaking of which, this is an excellent time to do an intro to Season 3.
Oh, yeah.
Fuck space.
We've been playing for months, Aaron. No, Mike. Tom. Shit!
I think possibly a year.
Don't do that.
Stop reminding John of his mortality. We've talked about this.
But he's fragile.
He doesn't like it.
I don't know.
We'll see.
Seriously, though, don't talk about time.
Well, it's 9:02, and this is the introduction to Series 3
in the morning
of Esposito.
Which we started in July of 2022.
Don't do that.
I'm down.
No.
Welcome to Esposito Night.
There's been children born since then.
There have been two Esposito children born. What's gone on since we actually started playing this game? The Russia-Ukraine war grinds on. A new front appears to have opened in the Middle East.
Wait, three prime ministers.
Oh, yep. Yeah, the economy's crashed and is sort of still kind of crashing.
None of them are elected.
Yeah, everyone's sort of used to it now, so that's fine.
Yeah. The world is gripped by an inflation crisis, which is definitely transitory and isn't going to lead us into a economic catastrophe. Has anything good happened?
The Esposito kids.
Oh, yeah, the Esposito kids, yep.
Suella Braverman's been sad.
Just to clarify, that is actually us having children, not a spin-off featuring younger cast members getting into shenanigans in space whilst also trying to balance the troubles of high school and burgeoning love lives.
I was thinking it was animated as younger characters.
You wouldn't put the money into live action for that shit.
Don't tell our audience about a better podcast that we're not doing.
Yet. Season 4 idea.
I think we're the only podcast.
Yeah.
I assumed that was why we weren't making any money.
Yeah, Mike, Tom, and I all had children. Not together.
You'd be forgiven for thinking so.
It wouldn't be... Well, it would be questionable in terms of the science of it all, but it wouldn't be beyond emotion.
Well, we just need a bowl and a spoon to stir it.
Oh, my God. But it just grows like a
horrendous day to have ears.
You don't want to use a whisk because it's a bit too violent for it. You want to stir it slowly with a spoon.
Born of bowl.
What else happened? Didn't Trump get something in court? I can't remember.
The Queen died.
Oh, the Queen died.
Yeah.
And then we got Charles as the King, which was a whole thing. They handed him his rod of justice and his gloves of inconsistency.
His very large fingers. Well done, Camilla.
And his plus one ring of protection.
And his crown of I put a flag in it, so it's mine.
I put a flag in you, now you're mine.
Anything else happened?
Better stop the things you do, because I don't respect your culture.
June 2022. Not me.
So yeah, I think that pretty much sums up where we've come from, where we've gone, and where it has hence gone from again.
I don't know if any of them are usable as an intro for the podcast.
Oh yeah, we're back. We're going to do it all over again. Into the sim. Hope you like the completely original concept of a group of individuals being sucked into the internet and addressing the various social topics of the day through a semi-satirical lens. Completely new, novel idea, never been done before.
I'm sad that Rebook isn't in Reboot.
Nice. For clarification, so you will have heard in season 2.5 that was expertly DM'd by Mike, references to the start of season 3, and in season 3, the start of it, it will seem like we have no idea that 2.5 ever happened. That is perfectly normal. The timeline is fine. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, I'm just a construct anyway.
Yeah.
Just go with it. That's what we did. And everything's fine.
Everything's fine.
Everything's a-okay.
It's all fine.
So smash that like button and click the bell to subscribe.
Oh, this is what a shitty intro.
I like it. Print it.
Fuck it, we're live.
And we're awfully sorry.
No, we're not.
Sorry.
Okay. Don't interrupt him, Thomas. Jeez.
Are you ready? Are you good?
I wasn't ready. It's for everyone's sake, really. I feel like the moment needed more gravitas. I feel like we needed a pause and then off the cliff face, you know, like not just a segueing in conversation-wise.
Well, how about that? Tom Kirk, we're about to start season 3 of Esposito. Are you ready?
If that's all right with you.
Everyone, please turn off your mobile phones except you, Aaron, because that's apparently how we record podcasts now.
First of all, you're a bitch.
Yeah.
Second of all, Farrah.
Okay, I'm ready. The gravitas is...
Are you ready?
Just do a deep breath and make it an event.
Our story begins in the cold depth of space. A vacuum studded with lonely lights and debris floating lonely and seemingly static. Tyson, you stand at the viewport of the strike shuttle. The looming debris of an asteroid field slowly draws closer. You know, scattered within is your target. Your hands grip around the helmet of your breaching suit. You know that for part of this journey, at least, the pressurized seal that it'll create, the only thing that will stop you from having your life snatched, all remains spun away into that end. Bring the helmet up to your maned head.
Stuffing.
What?
Literally, 1 minute. He just has his hands around his helmet.
Fuck! I didn't even. We haven't done this in so long. God, I hate you.
Doom, faced with impending doom, he just grips.
You absolute cunt. You wanted gravitas and you turned it into a dick joke. Fuck you. You know what? You're standing there looking out the fucking window.
Not at me.
No, it's all you. Fuck you guys. Wait,
he put his helmet in his mouth. What did you say?
He manages to eventually stuff his stupid fucking head into his helmet. And he walks down the gangway of the ship into the lower hangar, where you come face to face with the rest of your squad. These men
are loading themselves into what appear to be aerodynamic coffins. 6-foot by 2-foot tubes that are pneumatically loaded into a whirring rack. As each man steps into the pod is loaded vertically onto the rack and is slid along a rail and deep into a hole.
Swap that.
Down into the bowels of the ship. I tried gravitas, you motherfuckers. I tried.
Gravitas.
Fuck. Oh.
You're managing quite a good balance between gravitas and just dealing with us.
And dick jokes.
This is going to be a long fucking campaign.
Oh my god. So long.
In turn, Tyson, you take a step into your own pod. And you hear the pneumatic hiss as the covering plate slides into place. And as you feel the lurch of the pod being loaded into the firing rack, you suddenly hear a electronic beep as your heads-up display flashes. Raylor, you are sat in a bank of desks working at your station. You are running through lines and lines and lines of code. You're trying to decipher the hidden mysteries that are found layer by layer. But your heart's not in the work. It hasn't been for a while. You turn around and you can see among the banks and the banks of computers, there are maybe 50 other individuals, just like yourself, of various races, each of them sat in front of a workstation with a holographic screen, each of them working on their own segment of code from a wider tapestry of information. But you all are attempting futilely to understand. You hear a light cough from behind you, and you turn to see a white coated man, a Promethean. He has a shock of fluorescent yellow hair. He coughs gently. Being a Promethean, he seems, by all accounts, to be a very well-kept human being. But you can see that he's an older Promethean. You can see it around his eyes, crow's feet, you know, a slight pinching at the mouth, a hollow of the cheeks. And his icy, cold, blue eyes stare down into yours. And in a soft voice that's edged with slight reproof, Professor Chester says, "My boy, are we not keeping you busy enough?"
"Oh no, I was just resting my eyes away from the curve. Very exciting delight."
The professor snorts slightly, and it's not an unkind gesture. And he seems to reach out a hand almost to tap you on the shoulder, but he holds back at the last moment and returns his hand to his side and says, "I understand. We're doing great work here. But unfortunately, some of us the unremarkable before we can do. I will not take up any more of your time." And with that, Professor Chester walks slowly away, and you hear the hiss of a pneumatic door as he leaves the bullpen. Billy, your mind is a jagged mass of thoughts, feelings, of images, sounds, of scent. It's the clack of blades, the bark of gunfire, the smell of rotten flesh, the bite of steel against flesh. And for a moment, you blink, and you are drowning. You're suspended in water. You can't breathe, you can't speak, you can't scream. There's something in your mouth. And you look through murky waters, and you see a lab of some kind. And you can make out indistinct shapes. But what you can see most clearly is a light in the center of the room. It burns white and strong. But before your eyes can focus, darkness edges in and overtakes you again. Once again, your subject, sounds, and the visions. And Tom's buggered off. Bollocks.
Perfect timing.
Billy's back.
Billy's back.
Back again, again. Billy's back. Tell a friend.
I think he has many friends.
Not anymore. No,
we're not telling Philly's friends, we're telling us.
I don't think they care.
Our friends don't care. Yeah, they don't listen.
Guys, wait, Philly's back. We are a friend. What's a Philly?
Like a meal.
I think it's a lady horse.
No, you're thinking of the early 2000s pop sensation Lady Hawk. She was just a lady hawk. Named after the 80s film where a lady got turned into a hawk.
Who?
Which didn't feature the actor born in the 80s, known as Ethan Hawke.
Okay.
Who is in no way a relative of the skateboarding legend Tony Hawk.
Ladies and gentlemen, 6 degrees of Hawk.
Oh man, that's what this series should have been. Gotta get Hawk nasty. Anyway, where was I? Oh yeah, the spill.
Just the spill's fine.
Just spill.
The artist formerly known as Spill.
Is he fine?
You are imprisoned. Like a wasp under glass. Like bacteria in a dish. You are trapped. You pace the border of your cell. A meter diameter circle, featureless. You place your hands against the reinforced glass that contains you. You look out into the laboratory. Banks of whirring machinery, computers and more arcane instruments litter the room. In the center stands a strange device. To a casual observer, it would seem to be perhaps some kind of generator. But you, from your prison, can see the streaming lines of code beamed across a hologram, feeding downwards like a cascade of water. You can see the code shifting, moving, living, breathing. Your fingers become claws and they screech down the inside of the tube, and you're overcome for a moment by a sickening jealousy. These faceless, thoughtless lines of cold logic seem to in their movements create a parody of the life that so fascinates you, that so truly eludes you. You don't know how long you've been staring into the code, but your reverie is broken by the hiss of pneumatic doors, and an elderly Promethean steps into the room. He doesn't acknowledge you or the other tank filled with a semi-opaque greenish fluid suspending a horrifically mutilated corpse like an amniotic sac. Instead, the Promethean walks straight towards the flickering lines code that dominate the center of the laboratory. He stares into it for some time, as you did, before he states simply, seemingly to the room at large, We're so close. I can almost feel it. I will soon be able to unravel such secrets. I will be able to pull apart the simple touchstones of our reality. Like a child with candy floss, all of the mysteries that surround me. And he turns to you as he says this, Spill. Will be unraveled. He steps towards your container. So, are you as excited as I am?
This is awful.
I am sorry. And he outstretches a hand and he gently caresses the outside of your prison. And you can hear a slight squeak of flesh against the glass. Yours is a tortured existence. You should not be.
No. No. Oh, sorry, I thought there was more. We're just going to agree on that, are we? That's not exactly the pick-me-up I needed for this morning.
He smiles. Your suffering will be at an end.
Oh.
And he steps back over to the lines of code. He says, once we have unraveled this mystery, then I will be far better placed to take you apart and find out what makes you tick.
No, I've thought about the options, and no, that just doesn't work for me at all.
He smiles to himself again, and he looks at you over his shoulder, and he says, luckily for me, your consent on this matter is unnecessary.
Hang on. I read something about this. It'll come to me.
As you're thinking, Spill, suddenly the lights go dim. There's a rumble from deep within the complex. And a electronic siren starts to blare. Suddenly the room is filled with red light. The cascade of holographic code in the centre of the room is no longer present, and the klaxons blare, and the doctor turns to a screen on a bank of computers nearby, runs over to it, placing his hands on either side of the screen, his eyes wide, his jaw clenched, and he whispers under his breath, we're under attack.
In a bad way.
Tyson, your team is dead. Shot out of the sky by the batteries that were defending the asteroid base. Of your squad, yours was the only pod to breach the defences and punch its way clean into one of the service corridors of the facility. Your heads-up display shows that other squads have managed to breach the facility, but they are a significant way away from you. The pneumatic seals in your pod explode outwards, ejecting the covering panel forwards with the force of a small bomb. You hear a metallic screech of metal on metal and a yelp of pain as the metal column embeds itself on an opposing wall. You are currently sat prone in your... You can see in front of you the emergency lit corridor ahead of you. What would you like to do?
So I'll eject from the pod. What weapons do I have, just to stuff that I start with? Or
yeah, whatever's on your sheet.
Yeah, I'll get my shield and my heavy pistol ready and eject from the pod.
So you hit the quick release belt that kept you restrained within your pod during the drop, and the righting mechanism of the seat pushes you quite deftly onto your feet. You make a short drop, maybe a foot onto the ground with your weapon at the ready. You can see the corridor snakes off for about maybe 30 meters to your left, but to your right, there's an immediate T-junction.
Yeah, I'll go and check the right and dip my head around the T-junction, checking left and right.
To your left, the way is clear. To your right, you can see multiple figures in generic black military fatigues jogging down the corridor towards you.
How many?
Three.
I'll dip back the way I came and head round the snaking corridor, being careful to check around corners as I go, trying to be as quiet as possible.
Okay, cool. So roll a stealth check for me.
First roll of the campaign. We all know what it's going to be. Okay. 12.
Okay. You begin to proceed quickly down the corridor. Your boots manage to muffle most of the noise of your footsteps. You're quite confident that the klaxon and sirens will obscure most of the sound that you make at this point. Unfortunately, there are a few places for you to hide within the corridor, and you can hear the footsteps of the three-man patrol that you spotted getting closer, and you try to tuck yourself into a corner of the corridor as it snakes away and as they run past. And you watch as the first man passes across the threshold of the junction that you spotted them from. But the second man does a double take, slowing to a light jog. And he throws out his hand to stop his friend. And he looks up and he says, "Halt! Who goes there?"
Shoot him in the head.
Okay, roll initiative.
Starters need to go on.
Oh my god. There it is, guys. The first natural one.
Hey.
It had to be
that's
you.
Three on my initiative.
Oh, my lord.
Level two. I'm pretty sure that means you die.
There's three of them. Fuck.
Sorry, it's not like you're alone.
Right. So you get a surprise round on these guys. You can fire that first shot.
All right. That's a bit better. That's a natural 19 plus... 6, 25.
That will hit.
Full damage as well, so that's 10 points of piercing damage.
So you turn on your heel, bring your weapon up, and you fire, and your bullet just sort of whistles down the corridor, just taking this guard full in the face, and you watch his head snap back, bounce off of the wall behind him, and you watch him crumple. The second guard yells for his compatriot who ran past you, and he fires his weapon at you. Does a 17 hit you?
Does.
He draws his pistol and fires and does 8 points of damage to you.
Shit.
The second guard rounds the corner using the corner of the corridor as cover and he also fires at you, but misses Wilding. The bullet ricochets down the corridor. You can see that the corridor behind you snakes on maybe another 20 feet into an automatic door.
So they both pass me, the guards?
Both guards are maybe 40 feet to your right at the other end of the corridor, whereas the door that you're looking at is maybe 20 feet away from you.
Okay, great. I will take a shot at the nearest guard.
Okay.
For 15.
That'll hit.
6 points of piercing damage.
Right. You fire again down the corridor. You watch as this guard jerks as a bullet kind of rips into his shoulder, but he's still standing.
I'll do an action surge.
Okay.
I'll fire at him again.
Okay.
For 24.
That'll hit.
7 points of piercing damage this time.
Okay. This time he drops. The second bullet just hits him square in the neck. And you watch an arterial burst of blood at his neck. And you hear him gurgle inside his helmet as he falls. And you hear a yell from his comrade. So is that everything that you're doing?
No, I'm going to use my movement to then move back to the automatic door to my right.
Okay. You get to the door and you can see on the right-hand side there's a small control panel next to it. As you move within about a foot of the threshold of the door, you notice the small screen at the top of the panel flashes red. But obviously in this situation, you don't have a chance to see what the fairly small writing on that screen actually says.
Can I use any free action to either examine the panel or press a button on the panel to try and open the door?
Not in the current situation, no. You've shot a guy twice and then you move down a corridor, so you're at the end of your powers.
I'm able to tuck in somewhat to the wall to take some kind of cover.
Yeah, that's fine. So roll a perception checkpoint, please, Mike.
12.
You see the remaining guard from cover. He grabs a small square device that's holstered on the webbing on his chest, and you see him speak into it before he takes another shot at you. Does a 15 hit you?
Yes, it does.
A bullet whizzes down the corridor and hits you for another 2 damage. And it is now your turn again. The klaxons are blaring and it's hard to think. The red electric emergency lighting is strobing at this point.
I'm able to try and figure out how to get into this door via this panel.
Make a quick computers check for me, please.
There it is. Old reliable. That's a natural 20.
So you take a look through the access panel and it's clearly not guarding a secure area of the facility. So you're able to essentially just shoot the panel, Han Solo style, and with a hiss, the pneumatic doors slide open. With that, let's switch back to John for a moment.
I am here.
Sorry, what was the name?
It makes it sound like I wasn't.
What was the name of your character again?
Raylor.
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 So,
God damn you.
Raylor, you, along with the bank of other data clerks, are taken aback by the sudden rumble of thunder throughout the facility. And as the light cut out, you hear a couple of screams from some of your colleagues before the red emergency lighting flickers on. The first thing you notice is that your workstation has lost power. And as you notice that, that's when the klaxons start to blare. The bank of computers in this room are basically almost like an amphitheater, shaped in semicircles leading downwards at an angle for maybe 20 feet down. And at the base of this is a working floor where there are larger computing machines which the technicians feed information into and draw telemetry data and other information more to do with the wider installation than the actual work that you're doing. And dominating the center of that bottom floor is a large door that you've never paid much attention to previously, even as you've used it to enter work every day that you've been on this facility. But now you see it is rimed with red emergency lights. And you look over your shoulder up a few levels of the computing banks towards a larger door. This is the door that the professor normally only has access to. And it's the door that he disappeared through after chastising you barely 5 minutes prior. And you notice that the doorway there is also rimed with red lights, but you hear a pneumatic hiss as a huge kind of blast panel slides down with a thud as the klaxons blare. This armored bulkhead, it looks like, is painted with hazard stripes.
What's everyone else doing?
Everyone else is just sort of looking around, clearly panicked, but also equally as clearly unsure of what to do.
Right. All right, Raylor. Raylor Thunderclaw, time to shine. I just shuffle past the guy next to me. I'm just going to go downstairs and ask the technician, isn't he? Sorry, if you could just step slightly forward so I can get behind you. Right, I'll climb over the desk. It's fine. It's not on. It's fine. Don't worry about it.
Roll a dexterity check for me, please.
10.
You managed to climb up onto one of the banks of desks, but something that you've never realised before is the holographic projectors that you've been working off of are actually very smooth, almost frictionless screens. Obviously, you've never interacted with them. They're not touch-based. But they do make it very difficult for you to stand. So as you clamber up onto one of the desks, you slip and your foot gives way and you tumble forwards, bouncing off of several banks of desks before landing on and you take 6 points of bludgeoning damage.
I got shot with less damage.
You land awkwardly. You hear a finger break.
Oh, God. I hope that's not one of my typing fingers. They're all typing fingers. Don't be silly, Raylor. Right. That's done. Okay.
You look down and you notice that in your shirt pocket, one of your pens has burst.
Oh, for flip's sake.
On the bright side, your calamitous fall appears to have taken the attention of almost everyone in the room, and for a moment at least has given people a distraction from their panic.
Hello, everyone. Don't mind me. I'm just going to go and see if I can find out what's happening.
And he eyes straight down at his feet, walks down to the computers at the bottom.
Hello.
One of the technicians, there are several working at the banks of machinery. Most are quite feverishly attempting to get them online. A couple are starting to give in to the panic that seems to be slowly filling the room and are frustratedly hitting machines. You've approached one of the calmer looking ones who apparently noticed your fall, because the first thing he says to you is, are you all right, mate?
Oh, very kind. Yes, thank you. Yes, I think I've broken a finger and my pen is not very well. But otherwise, I'm okay. Is your computer off? Is that the problem?
We're trying to get systems back online. It sounded like something's hit us, but obviously we're in an asteroid belt, but the external systems should have put peer to any foreign objects that were in line to strike us. And there's been no showers recently, so it doesn't make any sense.
Right. Okay. And is it off because it's lost power, do you know? Or should I take a look? Do you want me to take a look at your computer, see if we can get on, see what's going on outside? I don't mind.
I mean, you can. I thought you were just a clerk. Are you part of the tech team?
I've just
I'm quite skilled with computers, if I do say so myself. I know a thing or two.
Roll a quick persuasion check for me.
That's actually not bad. 15.
The engineer takes a step back away from you to kind of appraise you. Would you like to describe your character for me, please?
Yes. So, he is quite short for a Valner. He's only about 6 foot. His first, it's quite plain, it's like ginger, and then his mane's quite red. He looks like a classic lion, if you will. But he is really skinny, and like the mane is a little bit shaggy and tufty, and like he looks like he doesn't brush his fur regularly. He's very awkward looking.
The technician sees this, and he's, for a moment, he looks as though he's going to tell you to head back to your desk. But something about the sheer awkwardness of you seems to convince him that you might know your way around a computer. He says, hey, you know what? Go on. Take a look. See what you can do.
So first of all, I'm going to use a background feature.
Oh, yeah.
To identify the make and model of this computer.
Okay. So the make of this computer is a pair. It's a fairly standard, high-end sort of tech brand of human design. This is one of the largest tech brands in the wider galaxy that is sort of spearheaded by a visionary CEO and tech king, if you were, a guy known as Nick Sugarman. So these are fairly expensive but widely used models. So you're quite familiar with these.
A pair. I love a pair. Gonna need a pair for hours. Bit of a joke there.
Cut that.
It's the atmosphere. Tends to make the computers feel at ease. I'm kidding, they don't have ears. No, actually, these ones do actually have ears, but they're internal. It's sort of a microphone. It's not important. Don't worry about it. And I'm going to try and figure out, I guess, this sounds really dumb, where the problem is. I know the power's not on, but like, is it because it's not getting any power or because something's been dislodged that channels the power? I don't know.
How are you going to go about that?
Well, first off, I'm going to walk up and tap the screen a few times to see if there's any response there, if there's any residual power. I'm assuming nothing appears there. I'm going to do a quick loop of the computer. I'm imagining this is like a huge freestanding thing for some reason.
Yeah. Imagine like the old ticker tape ones, but in space. So it's automatically high tech.
Crouch down and press a button in the corner of a panel, and the panel will fall open, and I start having a look inside around the power units in there to see if there's anything that's been dislodged or if it is in fact just not receiving power.
Okay, that's fine. So, actually, before you make your mechanics check, can you make a perception check for me, please?
I'm quite perceptive, don't you know? 21.
So you're about to start work on the computer. Before you hear something disconcerting from the other side of the door, you're certain that what you're hearing is the sound of gunfire echoing down the corridor. And this starts people in the room panicking. And a couple of the engineers turn to the crowd of panicking folks. Says, stay calm, stay calm. We're currently investigating this matter. Everyone just stay calm and stay put, please. We just need to work out what's going on, and then we can resolve the situation, okay? And the engineer looks over his shoulder at you, Rylor, and he says, do you want to hurry this up?
Sorry, yes, of course. Gosh, that gunfire is like a ticking clock. Really, much is he gone, doesn't it? Huh. Goodness me. Wish my pen worked still. Use my pens.
Make a mechanics check for me, please.
Yeah, that's 24.
Okay, so you're able to tinker around with the internals of this machine. And with a whir and bling, 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 bling. The entire bank of computers hums into life. There's an almost audible exhale from everyone within the room.
But before you can celebrate, you hear a bang from the other side of the door, and the main door into the room slides open with a hiss.
And the door downstairs with me, or the door that the guy goes through?
The door downstairs with you. And standing in the doorway is a tall, black-clad, helmeted figure carrying a shield and a pistol. Like, you enter the room from the corridor, and ignoring your training, you back into the room, keeping your pistol kind of trained on the corridor. And it's only once you enter the room, you notice that it's filled with people. Maybe 30 or so white-coated science types, a few guys backing away from you with their hands raised in orange boiler suits. And one figure wearing a white coat that seems very familiar to you. A Valna.
Hello, mysterious shielded figure. Welcome to our lab. It's got computer. Please don't show me.
Raylor, is that fucking you?
Listen.
Hold on a second. I'll take a couple of shots into the corridor back at the guy.
Oh, goodness.
Everyone in the room flinches away from you, and there's a couple more screams.
I'll try and close the door if I can and bar it.
You've kind of shot the panel open from the other side of the room. You take a quick glance at the panel on the inside, and you just see that it's flashing on and off.
Raylor, come here, close this fucking door now.
It's all right, good. Lovely to see you again, brother. Let me just have a quick look.
And can I use the panel to shut the door?
Make a computer's check. As you walk past him, the engineer with his hands still raised whispers to you, Raylor. You know this fucking psychopath.
Oh yes, we're sort of related in a very specific. We are very specifically. We're brothers. Yes.
Raylor, for fuck's sake, mate.
It is all right. Fine. Yes, I'm doing it. I'm shutting the door.
You can hear from the other end of the corridor shouts and the sounds of footsteps.
No, thank you. There's enough. Intruders here for now, thank you. And I, yeah. Beep boop, beep boop, boop, boop.
What did you get for your computer's check?
14.
You tap in a master command code, and with a hiss, the pneumatic door seals.
Here we are, door closed, everything's fine. Everyone that I don't really know, that I've been working with for years, though I have no idea who you are, this is my brother, Mike. No, Tyson. Sorry, he's not.
Your brother's Mike Tyson?
there's no way to explain this other than I believe he is controlled by a higher power that I refer to as Mike.
My middle name is Mike. Anyway, let's not get into that. What the fuck are you doing here?
Oh, well, there was an explosion and a bit of a thud. So I thought I'd go and have a look and see, do these computers tell us what's going on?
Oh, I forgot about this. 2 seconds and I fire a shot into the air. Everybody get on the fucking floor.
Oh, yes. All right. And I start crouching down onto the floor.
Not you.
Oh. Yeah, right, yes.
So everyone visibly shaken by this sudden strange turn of events quickly complies. Through the now steel bulkhead door you can hear voices and the clipped mechanical notes of people speaking through electronic communication devices and what sounds like more people running down the corridor. But yeah, so you're now, Tyson, you're fairly obviously in control of the situation with a room full of around 40 or so hostages, not including your brother.
Right. We'll get into why you're in this facility at some point, because
they pay me.
Right. Well, what's going on here is fucking terrible, mate. I need to get you out of here, and also at the same time, I'm looking for a particular person. I get a bit closer to him. There's a Promethean professor that needs to be. Do you have any idea where he is?
You're rescuing him as well. I see. He's in danger too. Yes, I know where he's gone. Yeah, he's actually up through that door at the top. That's where he went. He nearly patted me on the shoulder before, but then he thought better of it, which is fair enough. I've not washed in a few days.
Right. That's good. Well, come in with me then.
He looks around at the room, tries to make eye contact with anyone, but there's no one looking at him.
Just grabbing by the shoulder, almost by the
yes.
for the neck.
Okay. Family reunion. Away.
I can't believe that you're here, Bob.
Thunderclaws are back together again.
Imagine if Mum could see us now.
She'd be delighted that we're doing things together. It's not she.
Anyway, onwards and upwards. I drag him up the stairs, like towards this door.
So, Tyce, with a thud each time Rylor's shins hit a step, you drag him slowly up the flights of computer banks up to the armoured bulkhead, and you drop him in front of the access panel, the right-hand side of the doorway.
I need my guns.
What?
Should I get my guns out?
Oh, if you've fucking got them. Well, hold on. And I take my helm off for a second, and you just see this beautifully coiffed, black-furred, panther-esque Valna, very piercing green eyes, very, very attractive, almost touching 7 feet tall.
Fucking furry. Muscular. Sorry, what?
Degenerate. That's an in-joke, people listening at home.
No. Don't try and plug your fucking DeviantArt page, you degenerate. Anyway, carry on.
I'm going to look him straight in the eye and say, you being here and everything, can I trust you?
I don't see why not.
Insight check on that.
Roll an insight check.
15.
Right, or roll a bluff or persuasion, whichever you see fit.
There is no bluff.
He is your brother.
Nice.
That's 11.
Tyson, you aren't convinced that you can trust him.
Surely if he's doing insight, he has an idea of like my actual motives.
I was just using, that actually makes sense. Yeah, you know, fuck it, yeah, fine. You trust him as a brother would.
Okay. Oh, and I put the helmet back on and I waggle my pistol. I waggle my pistol towards the
the old days. Hey,
onwards and upwards. I don't know why this is going to be his kind of phrase.
Righto. Let's see if I can get this panel to open the door. I assume is what we're going for. Yeah.
Basically, yeah.
You hear from down below, the engineer sort of says, Is anyone going to explain what's going on?
This is my brother, and we're rescuing the professor, so we're opening the door.
And also, I don't remember asking you a goddamn fucking thing. I shoot another bullet into the air.
Goodness me. You just fire those bullets everywhere, don't you?
No time. Onwards and upwards.
I love it. I try and open the door.
Roll a computer's check.
23.
Okay. Inexplicably, you manage to bypass some of the fairly high-level security encryption that's keyed to this door. And with a grinding hiss, the extra armoured bulkhead sort of raises upwards into a overhead panel. And the locks disengage. the spill, you are pressed up against the glass of your container, watching the professor feverishly tap away at his computer panding. He's muttering incoherently to himself. He races over to the center of the room and taps at a keypad. And you see for a brief moment the light that was dominating the center of the room flicker, but then die. The professor then runs over to another set of panels close to you. You're just hearing him mutter to himself, No, we were so close. No, this can't end now. All of my work. And he draws what you see, it looks like a small black square, almost like a floppy disk, but not as large, from the panel here. Maybe
a mini disk.
A little mini disk, yeah. Like a large SSD or a small floppy disk. I don't know why we went from like massive to small. Technology's weird. So he takes this small storage device and he runs back over to his personal panel, and you watch him slide this into a port, and the screen blinks into life and he taps away and says, I can at least hide it. Hide it.
And Spill just knocks on the glass with one of his claws. Squeak, 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 squeak.
The professor doesn't look up.
Can I help at all?
The professor looks up for a moment and says, how?
Well, I don't really know what you're trying to achieve, so I'd need a little bit more information. But from what I've learnt in these past few minutes, I think I'm quite a useful person.
Up and down. Perhaps when the moment's right.
Also, what's our relationship? I'm getting some mixed signals.
And he goes back to his work on the computer. You can still hear the klaxons blaring. And roll a perception check for me.
First roll of the campaign for me. It's a 17.
You can see that the lights surrounding the single doorway into the laboratory, as soon as the emergency lighting had kind of kicked into life, had turned red, but suddenly they've switched to green and the doors are sliding open, unbeknownst to the professor.
I put my hand up politely.
Roll a performance check for me, please.
That is my first one of the campaign.
Hooray!
Oh, what a precedent.
The professor, absorbed in his current task and deafened by the klaxon's wail, neither notices the doors to his laboratory opening nor your polite attempt to grab his attention. And so Rylor and Tyson are able to step into the laboratory unmolested.
Has he noticed us then?
He has not.
I'm just there waving.
Yeah, you can see do you want to describe yourself, Tom?
So, in the... I'm imagining like a glass container, like a strengthened plexiglass prison kind of thing.
Yeah.
Inside that you see what looks a bit like an ashen forge, but not quite. The flesh and skin has been quite mutated and quite morphed, so things are slightly in the wrong place by conventional standards. And he's got this patchy hair and his eyes don't quite align properly. And you get the feeling he's never really existed outside of this container.
Waves back.
I
give them a shush sign, and whilst also looking at the spill in a kind of like, what the fuck is that kind of way, I'm then going to try and just creep up to the back of the professor and execute him, put a bullet in the back of his head.
Roll a stealth check for me, please.
Spill sort of puts his hand up like a bit more vigorously.
Not does the same thing as well, like
stealth check's not that good. Six.
So the professor sort of tapping away at his, you, Tyson, are instantly focused on your opponent and you step towards him, but your brother's nasally tones of excuse me distract you momentarily, and your foot catches on a piece of tubing running across the floor, and you stumble. You don't quite fall. You manage to catch this piece of tubing enough to where it pulls itself free from the tank that it's attached to, and there's a hiss and then a wet sort of rushing sound of water suddenly being released from a drain, and this causes the professor to look up and his eyes wide. He suddenly draws a pistol and starts firing wildly towards you, and I need to look up burst firing again, hang on. Where did I get drunk before this?
I think it's a 10-foot cube, I think it is.
It is weird that you got drunk before and not during.
Yeah, no, I've genuinely sobered up.
Wow.
Which is also weird. Like, how often have we started playing Esposito and we've got more sober as the game has gone along? I mean, I've not.
Yeah, I've not.
It feels wrong. I don't like it.
Mike's just been sober the whole time. It's terrifying.
It's a strange name.
Still have.
But also wonderful.
Still having fun though, guys.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. I feel bad for Tom Owen, who's just been dead the whole time.
I mean, I've been dead since season two.
Sorry, sir.
That's what they call him, Dead Tom.
Right, so I can see the thing that's fucking referencing burst fire, but like, not a thing actually explaining burst fire.
Basically, Michael have to make a dexterity saving throw versus 8 plus your proficiency plus your dex bonus.
It's anyone within a 10-foot cube has to make that
anyone save. Anyone with a 10-foot cube has to make that save. And then I think it's the weapons dice damage dealt to everyone.
Okay. Well, just flat.
Yeah, no modifiers.
Yeah, there's no modifiers to it because it's area of effect. So,
but if you have a PSD... portable shield display.
No, we don't do that rule, Mike. Come on.
Are we? Okay, so.
It's been many, many, many times that we've played this and we've never used that rule. Unless Aaron wants to start using it.
No. So yeah, roll a dexterity save, both Tyson and Rylor.
I hold what? Silver.
Oh, five. Good. Four.
Okay. So you both take 6 points of damage then from this burst of fire from the professor's pistol.
Ow.
Oh no. That hurts as much as falling downstairs.
This is like the look you see on Spill's face here is a mix of intrigue and horror. At this, like, as this is all happening, Spill's very surprised at what's going on right now.
Tyson, quickly return fire.
Yes. Well, before you do, you notice that as the professor fires, his line of bullets strikes you and your brother, but also the tank, the tube of which your foot accidentally dislodged. And as these bullets strike at the housing and the screen of this tank, the pressure of the water behind it in an instant makes it crack and then burst. And this brackish green-tinted water flows across the room, causing electronics to spark and panels to burst free. Spill, you hear a harmonic electronic tone and a click, and it seems that the seals on your cage have been broken. And on this torrent of water, you see suddenly something dangling, being held, suspended by what looks like its mouth, by some sort of cord to the top of this tank, suddenly snap free. And this corpse, at the very least you assume it's a corpse, of a Kesh, it looks like, humbles from this pod. It's missing its legs, half of its torso, and its left arm. And its mouth is covered by this grotesque parody of an oxygen mask that seems affixed to its face. And it humbles with a wet thud from the tank. And Rylor and Tyson, for a horrifying moment, you see this creature blink wordlessly at you before it closes its eyes.
Oh, fucking hell.
Do I know who that was?
So, Bill, you have been aware of another occupant for quite some time. The new specimen was brought to the laboratory a couple of months ago to much fanfare. And following that, more and more deliveries of thorium were brought to the laboratory, along with more and more complicated heavy-duty machinery, which seems to be linked into, as far as you could tell, some of the communication arrays within the facility. But you were never able to make out the creature within. And there's honestly a little part of you that is a little bit disappointed to find out it's just a mutilated Kesh.
Not worth all the fuss.
Tyson, you are welcome to return fire.
Shoot him in the face. Oh, eight.
Eight.
Terrible, yeah.
So you return fire and the bullets go wide and ricochet off of the Spill's prison and shatter the screens of one of the computer banks on the other side of the room.
Careful!
Then, Ryle.
I feel sound. I'm not sure if... I probably wouldn't feel sound. Spill, because I've never met him before.
Yeah, he's also not injured.
Yeah, I was thinking that as well. So I field south myself, and I'll field south my brother. He looks a little bit like he's been shot a couple of times. And we both heal. And I'm out.
Honestly, who leaves a fucking lead in the middle of the room? It's health and safety, mate. Health and fucking safety.
I know. You wouldn't see this in my workstation because it's very small.
Spill, it's your turn.
So Spill's going to tentatively push open the door of his cabinet. Did you say that there's nothing like electrified on the floor? Is that he's just going to check? Because I think you said something about
that. Not as far as you can see, no.
Okay, so Spill sort of steps out and he looks around and he looks over to the scientist and he says, "Is this one of those situations where I could be useful?"
The professor turns and looks at you with pure horror on his face. And he turns from you to Tyson and Rylor and then down at the body of the Kesh. He brings his pistol across all of you in a sort of a wide, jerky arc. And he says, "Fools! Fools! You have no idea of what you've done. My work was going to create a new, perfect world. And you've destroyed it. Well, two can play at that game." And he brings his hand down on a panel, hitting a large button, and you feel the entire surface beneath your feet start to rumble, and the claxons take on a new piercing tone, and an automated voice rings out across the claxons. You hear it say, quite calmly and quite matter-of-factly. Sorium core breached. Meltdown imminent. Please evacuate facility.
He didn't even have a cover over that button. Talk about health and safety.
Excuse me, stranger, you heard the voice.
Yes, we should leave. You are correct, stranger. My name's Raylor, by the way. Nice to meet you. Let's go. We should go. We should go. Come on.
Yeah.
Can I try and grab the professor?
Make a grapple check. Grab.
Grab, bitch. 15.
You're able to grab the professor. And are you going to try and disarm him first or just grab him?
At this moment, I'm like, well, we're all dead. So pretty much, I mean, he's just melted down the entire...
Yeah.
How long do I know how long we have to try and get off this?
There is no countdown. So you reach out and you grab the professor and you're able to overpower this frail scientist fairly quickly.
You fucking idiot. You know what you've done?
I know exactly what I've done. Oh, unhand me. Unhand me. And I might let you live.
Tyson, you said we were going to rescue the professor. Now, I understand from context, it seems like possibly we shouldn't have been doing that. But also, you did lie to me. So, I think we need to have some... We're going to die. It. I mean, ploppers. Ploppers.
I'm just going to start headbutting and hitting the professor.
Sorium core breached. Meltdown imminent. Please evacuate for... And before the automated voice can finish its sentence, your world disappears in a blinding flash of light.
Oh, flip.
Your vision is the first thing to die as your flesh is stripped from your bones. Your bones are burned away into ash, and the ash is vaporized into minute particles that scatter into the inky black void. Like so many pinpricks of light. In any normal case, this would be the end of a story. But for you, it's just the beginning. The world you knew ended in light. Your new world begins in darkness. You awake into a pitch black room. You can feel a floor, but you can't see it. You're able to pick yourselves up, and only through a innate understanding of your own bodies are you able to articulate a sense of up and down, left and right. Suddenly, a grid appears beneath your feet. An orange grid overlaid on the darkness. A geometric pattern that gives you order. You hear a electronic thrum that seems to pulse through your entire bodies and slowly, pixel by pixel, the world around you starts to populate. A strange, strange world, as though you've looked at it through a kaleidoscope and then that kaleidoscope has the pieces of colour and shape slowly, slowly put together piece by piece to form a vague simulacrum of the world that you know rendered poorly with low resolution. Slowly, a ziggurat loads before you, a pyramid of sorts, and above it spins a diamond-shaped green gem, and sat on a stone throne at its head is a penguin wearing a red bandana, and it looks down at you and slowly claps its flippers together, and a voice says, "Well, isn't this nice? Someone else to welcome into the sim."